We'll call the meeting to order this morning of the Ag Finance Committee. Good morning to all. And we have a fairly full agenda. So if you take your seats, we do have enough for a quorum. And Representative Mark Anderson, have you had a chance to peruse the minutes of the last meeting? Boy, you're still digging for them. Very good. Representative Anderson approves the minutes of the meeting of April 5th. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And nay, same side. The minutes have been approved. First bill up is Representative Tice. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today I ask for your consideration and support for House File 1515, and I'm not really sure where this one is going. Is it just getting laid over for possible inclusion? Okay. Specifically,
just a second, Representative Tice. We have to move your bill. I will move your bill to put the bill in proper form. It's House File 1515, so go ahead and let's hear about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Specifically on House File 1515, we'll focus on Section 2 of the bill as it is appropriate for this committee. And last year, Representative Gunther's Greater Minnesota Committee reviewed Section 1 and passed it out of committee. So this bill means a lot to a number of communities around our state like St. Cloud, Wilmer, Albert Lea, Rochester, Faribault, and in the metro area. But it should mean a lot to all of us. And that's why I'm partnering with CAJUG, the Somali American Youth Association here in Minnesota. CAJUG has done some amazing work to help Somalis stay away from the threats through partnerships with our former House colleague, Hennepin County Sheriff Rich Stanek, Minnesota's U.S. Attorney's Office, the Boy Scouts Wilderness Inquiry, and 4-H. However, their impact has primarily been limited to Somali youth in the metro area. An expanded partnership within the state and the University of Minnesota Extension Programs is needed in other areas around the state, and this appropriation will greatly assist in that effort. House File 1515 gives us an opportunity to protect more of our young Minnesota Somalis by attracting them to the positive influences which help close the academic achievement gap and reduce our public safety costs. I have several testifiers with me, Mr. Chair, including CAJUG's Mohamed Farah, to give us some detail about the proposed expansion of the 4-H program.
Good morning, sir. Identify yourself and please proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Mohamed Farah. I am the Executive Director of CAJUG. CAJUG is an internationally known Somali youth development organization headquartered here in Minneapolis. I urge you to support the bill before you. In 2007, CAJUG began with an idea and a vision to build a strong support network for Somali youth in Minnesota. The underlying theme of this support network is the pursuit of higher education and instilling that goal in the youth at every young age. CAJUG is a Somali term for stay away, and we work to urge Somali youth to stay away from all negative influences by getting them engaged in education and the arts. Our mission is to focus youth toward higher education, civic involvement, and volunteer commitment. CAJUG received many awards over the past couple of years, including but not limited to the Somali American Community Appreciation Award from the elders and the community, which led us to host the Somali Independence Day Festival, which brings over 25,000 folks in Minneapolis and throughout the state. In order to better impact the community, CAJUG believes in partnership. Our work is more impactful when we partner with organizations such as Wilderness Inquiries and Somali Parent Association and the Voices of East African Women, and also folks like Hennepin County Sheriff Stanek and Andrew Luger, the U.S. Attorney of Minnesota. Because of our success of engaging young people in the Twin Cities, our partnership, the idea of CAJUG has been used by the international community to engage young people, most recently by the Canada government, by the Canadian government, Kenya, and Sweden. I would like to highlight a few of our programs. Our FANCA Invisible Art is a cultural heritage and arts combined program. Our Be at School program is a truancy program focused on increasing school attendance. Our Takeoff program is an after-school program that includes leadership building, which also includes 4-H Club in partnership with the University of Minnesota. We also do Yellowstone trips where we send a group of young girls to Yellowstone for outdoor experience tailored to leadership building, college preparation. One of our plans for the next few years is to expand our takeoff 4-H STEM program throughout the state where there are high populations of Somalis. We will do this by partnering with the University of Minnesota. To give you a picture of our current program and how it's running, the program includes two different tracks. The first track is the tutoring and the peer mentoring component. The second track is the 4-H club in collaboration with the University of Minnesota 4-H Youth Development Department. This track utilizes a curriculum called the Design It. So young people are creating various different things and learning by hand, competing with other 4-H'ers at a county level, and also competing at a county level and also state level. Some of our young people have been did presentation at the state fair last year. We are proposing to expand this particular program not only within the Twin Cities, but also implement this program in locations throughout the state where we have high populations of Somalis, such as St. Cloud, Rochester, and other places. 4-H wasn't able to be with us this morning, but they do support this particular bill. I would like to thank Representative Thies for her leadership and advocacy for this bill. Mr. Chair and members, with your support, we can do some great work in Greater Minnesota and other places around the state.
Thank you, and good morning. Identify yourself, and please let's hear your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Farhan Abdi. I'm Executive Director of St. Cloud. I want to thank Tommy T, our representative, for advocacy for this bill, and I want to thank everybody this morning. This bill is really... I don't want to talk about what I write it down. I just want to talk about what I have on my heart this morning. In St. Cloud, Central Minnesota, youth are really growing up. Somali youth are really growing up, and we have young kids in middle 15 to 25, and that is the time we can focus these kids to become good citizens for their country and for their community and for everybody. So please, I will make everything short. Please, if you guys can make sure this bill come to Kajok, that would be grateful. So that's all I want to say.
Thank you. Very well said. Questions from committee members? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Thies, for bringing this bill. I can't see you, and thank you to the testifiers. I want to add to the fact that Somali youth are growing up in Mankato as well, and I want to make sure that our community gets added to this list. And they are really, youth, all Somalis in our community are really an important part of our community and are emerging. We're very proud that a member of the Somali community just got elected to our school board, and find that as a major advance. And I like what you're talking about, advancing or focusing on youth towards higher education, civic involvement, and volunteer community. I'm certainly seeing that in my community and at the university where I worked for many years. Minnesota State University in Mankato is very proud that we're graduating a lot of Somali youth, and they're becoming really important parts of our community. I prepared secondary social studies. It was my career, and I'm very proud that a young man just graduated in that program this last fall, and so we're excited about that. I think this is an important step forward, and it dovetails a lot with significant efforts in our community to work together to make sure that Somali youth have an opportunity to advance. So I stand in strong support, and thanks again for bringing this bill forward.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to add my words of support for this proposal. I think the 4-H clubs have been amazing in terms of how they've been able to work with our youth throughout the state. And I'm really glad that Somali community members are getting a chance to participate in that. And this extends it. I think there's more room for it to even be used in the city for some of our Somali youth, too. So I think this is throughout the state. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, it is throughout the state, including Mankato, actually, where we're planning for that as well.
Great. Thank you so much. Well, we look forward to meeting some of the young 4-H'ers at our next meeting. Thank you.
Thank you so much. For the first time, just to add, for the first time here, we have a chance to create 4-H generations within the Somali community. And so thank you so much for your support, Representative Clark.
Very good. Representative Sandeen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering if either of the testifiers could refresh our memory as to what the four H's stand for in 4-H.
4-H stands for hand, heart, health, and healthy.
Representative Sundeep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been a while since I heard it.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I look at the list of cities here, I assume that the bill says, Representative Tice, I should ask you that it could be expanded to other communities that may have growing Somalian populations. So that's an opportunity.
Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keel, yes. I mean, this is a starting point, and I think once we get it into more communities and see what a great opportunity it is for everyone. And I'm really excited because even though the Stearns County Fair is in Sauk Center, we also have the Benton County Fair in Sauk Rapids. And so it's a great opportunity because of the arts as well, and I think it's a great opportunity for them to highlight and show us what art means for the Somali youth. So I think once we get it started, I don't expect it to fail whatsoever. I expect it to snowball, and we'll see it across the state. I love the program.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Representative Clark again.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was just noticing, the bill doesn't set limits on where it should go, so I think that's an important thing to note. I think the document says where some of the proposed locations are, but the bill itself looks like it's wide open, so it seems to me like that kind of development is important.
Very good. Anybody in the audience who'd care to testify for or against the bill? If not, any further comments, Representative? Oh, I'm sorry. Welcome, ma'am. Come on down, and we'd like to hear your testimony.
Thank you.
Speak your name, and then let's hear your testimony, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Farhia Khalib. I'm the Executive Director of Voice of East African Women. I'm here today on behalf of supporting Kajok, Executive Director Mohamed Farah. And this is something that we're fighting for our community. Our youth needs job opportunity and trainings. For your support, Mr. Chair and members, this will be something that the community needs. The community are struggling, and our youth are really all over the place. They don't have nowhere to go. Some of our work that we're doing in the community is what it's all about. So helping and supporting this bill today, I really think this is what helps the state of Minnesota. So I'm here for strongly asking for your support for this bill that represented by Kajuk. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? If not, Representative Tice, final comments on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I kind of like the out-of-the-box approach. I think when more people think of the Somali youth in 4-H, they're kind of going, hmm? But I think it's a great opportunity to do just that, to showcase exactly their commitment to the communities in 4-H, I think is a great way to show that commitment to the communities. So with that, I hope for your support. It's a great bill, and I look forward to working with you again in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Tice. With that, we'll lay over House File 1515 for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next bill up on the agenda is House File 3184. And Representative Franzen, would you care to move your bill to get it before the committee? Oh, I'm sorry. I will move your bill to get it before the committee, House File 3184. Good morning, and let's hear about your bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, committee members. Once again, it's another hemp bill. Last year, the legislature established an industrial hemp pilot project as authorized under the 2014 Farm Bill, the federal Farm Bill. This legislation enacted in a special session and established the framework for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture and institutions of higher education to study the growth, cultivation, and marketing of industrial hemp in Minnesota. We join a list of 27 other states who have now have laws governing industrial hemp and pilot projects. The department has finally secured its federal DEA permit in order to legally import seed for the pilot. They've also released an RFP for pilot program participation, and the department has also convened an advisory group for the pilot program. The funds authorized in this legislation can be utilized for the department for testing equipment and site monitoring activities to ensure compliance and provide outreach, education, and incentives to research pilot participants. Last year's enactment did not provide an appropriation to the department. This bill seeks to help get the program off the ground with its inaugural growing season. We have important information to gather concerning industrial hemp through this program. And with the information obtained by farmers, the department, and our researchers at the U of M, Minnesota, can establish itself as a leader in the development of industrial hemp and hemp-based products under this pilot program's tightly regulated perimeters. And if need be, the department can further articulate how they would use this these funds should they be adopted.
Very good, Bill. Representative Franzen. Questions from the committee? Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Franzen, I like this bill. I'm going to join on it today. I didn't realize I hadn't signed on from last year's endeavors, so keep up the good work on this issue.
Why, thank you. It's always nice when this former Iron Ranger and then Iron Ranger can meet on bills again, right?
Mr. Chair, a little leeway.
Oh, go ahead, Representative.
Once a ranger, always a ranger.
And you're passing around an informational sheet?
Yes, Representative? Just on what hemp the uses are for. And many of you have probably seen that that literature from last year. And thank you, Representative Kahn, for bringing that forward. She's been also my partner in crime on this piece of wonderful legislation. It's not.
And I see you have a testifier. I was going to ask just exactly what the department has done so far, but I would suspect we're going to hear from that from your testifier.
Yes.
Any other questions at this point? If not, we'll move to your testifier. Go ahead. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, member. My name is Geer Friso. I'm the director of the Plant Protection Division, and I really didn't have a formal presentation other than to comment that the department has spent an enormous amount of time trying to get this hemp program off the ground. We've diverted staff from other programs, and so we have all with the intent of trying to get seed in the ground by 2016. And, as Representative Franzen commented, we did seek a permit for importing hemp seed. We sought that in September, and we just got it about a month ago. And because of the unique legal status at the federal level, this has created quite a burden for the department. There's also other legal issues, things with trying to find appropriate pesticides that are registered, marketing aspects, processing facilities. So there's a lot of groundwork that needs to be done with hemp. We believe that just for Plant Protection Division, we would like to have adequate funds to provide a staff person who could oversee this and then have some administrative support. And also, we need some funding to support field staff that could do some of the checking on the fields in order to verify that the THC levels are, in fact, less than 0.3%. And that's important to the providing protection for farmers that this is a crop and nothing more. Another large portion of that's needed for funding is to provide support for the laboratory. There is a need for some additional equipment. The laboratory director is here if there's questions regarding the lab. And then we have some initial setup costs regarding IT, and also the marketing part of it. So that's sort of where we see the breakout, and we could provide a formal fiscal note if needed.
Thank you, Mr. Fries. Just a question. You mentioned pesticides that could be used on the crop. I was at a conference earlier this winter, and somebody from Oregon, where they are growing it much more than we are, and because of label restrictions, are really at that point were no chemicals that could be used on the crop. What can you update us on that? The status of that.
Mr. Chair, representatives, again, and that's an area that's outside of my division. We do have some folks here from PFMD if there's specifics, but my understanding is that there are no pesticides labeled for the use of hemp, so that it does pose a significant challenge for getting this crop off the ground.
And another question I had, I heard from a potential grower, this was a year or so ago, that the cost of seed, I think he used the number, thousands of dollars an acre for the seed. Could you comment on the price of seed that we hopefully can get in the ground this spring?
Mr. Chair, members, I don't know the specific prices of the seeds, but I do know one of the restrictions is that you can't move seed interstate. So the seed under our DEA permit, it has to come from international sources. So most likely that will be coming from Canada or European sources, and that all has to be coordinated with Customs and Border Protections. And so that all adds to the cost of implementing the program and the cost for the seed.
Okay. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think you brought up some very good points there of some of the archaic laws around this that we do need to change. I remember growing up in Rochester and seeing hemp, essentially, or ditchweed, as they called it, when I was in school, and grew all over pretty fine and rampantly to the point where, the fire department would come burn it down. It seems like we could source this in Minnesota here, create some great jobs, some great products, and provide a much needed market here in the U.S. that I don't think we're allowing our farmers across the state to access. So,
okay. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't, maybe this is for Representative Franson, but when I look at all these uses, I'm wondering, do we have industries set up that can actually use the hemp, and are they set up to be able to process it and handle it in different ways, or is that still something that has to be developed?
We actually do have some interested people that would have a market for hemp and are ready to put seed in the ground. However, because of various issues with the Department of Ag and still trying to maneuver around the federal government, that has kind of been a hang-up. But yes, there is certainly a market, and depending on who the RFP gets awarded to, there are places to move the hemp.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author or anyone else. It seems like the only hang-up is the acquiring the seed. Is there any effort, ongoing effort for seed production within Minnesota or the United States at this point? I know we do a lot of other seed crops up in the northern part of the state. I wonder if this is being looked at.
Do you need a testifier?
Yeah. So I have been in contact with somebody that does have seed that can be put in the ground today if he was allowed to. But still kind of waiting, and the department isn't really exactly sure if we can actually get seed in the ground this year, if it'll be in 2017, which has been very frustrating to the farmers that actually want to plant this year. And as you know, that we're going to have to diversify crops because farmers are looking for another option.
Mr. Fries, I think some of the language had to do with working with the university. So when you hopefully get this going, are you looking at plots at an experiment station around the state, or would farmers actually plant these test plots?
Mr. Chair and members, both the Farm Bill and the state statute allows pilot projects to be put in place either through the Department of Agriculture or institutes of higher learning. The University of Minnesota does have their own DEA permit, and so they are doing their own work. Our pilot project is structured right now that we would look to subcontract with individual growers or farmers or other interested parties. So it would be the Department of Agriculture that actually is holding the pilot project, but it would be individual farmers that would contract with us for that program.
Okay. So are you saying that both the university and the department are going to have kind of separate programs going here?
Mr. Chair, members, the university is actually looking at a much different aspect. They are researching, looking at existing wild varieties of hemp or ditchweed, as you say, and they're trying to explore the development of varieties that can be utilized for hemp. So they are looking at a sort of a different aspect where our pilot project is driven by the state statute, which focuses on cultivation, growth, and marketing of hemp.
Okay, thank you. Questions from committee members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I always get a kick out of the the usage of the word hemp and pilot in the same sentence, kind of ironic. To either Representative Franz or our testifier, I guess my question is, this pilot project would not be able to go forth if it wasn't, if we didn't fund this with $500,000? Is that true?
Representative or Mr. Freeze?
Mr. Chair, representatives, we have done everything possible to try and make this possible for 2016. And as I said, I have diverted a lot of resources within my division to try and make that happen. That has taken away from other existing programs. What I'm fearful for is if we do not get some sort of support, that really pulls the rug out from us, under us, from our ability to do the necessary follow-up inspections and the analysis of the crop. And I believe that's critically important because we need to protect farmers. We need to show that this is hemp and it's not anything else. And unless we have the ability to conduct that testing and analysis, I think the program is very much at risk.
Follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Representative
Anderson.
It's not that I'm against the bill. I just, to me, it's spending $500,000 to go out and plant some seeds and to do some follow-up. Just, it seems like a lot of money, and that's all I have to say. It's just a comment.
Well, and
Representative Franzen.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Anderson's point, you know, I agree. However, until the federal government officially removes hemp from the Controlled Substance Act, our hands are a little bit tied. Under the federal farm bill and moving forward, they have been saying that you know, that there is no appropriations for the feds to come after states who do who are growing hemp, much like the medical cannabis. However, we still do have to follow the letter of the law, and so without the funding, it does pose to be some problems here in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Hanson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, I was still reacting to Representative Metza saying he grew up in Rochester.
Yeah,
but
rah-rah.
Mr. Chair, iron and
Representative
egg.
Representative Metza, I didn't catch your comment.
Iron and egg.
What a combination.
My serious question, Mr. Chair, and maybe for the author is, you know, following up on Representative Anderson's, we have a number of spending bills here today, and I'm not sure I'm not on Ways and Means, but I'm assuming that targets will be coming soon, and this one looks like it's spending general fund, and we've had a couple other general funds, so is there any indication of what the target is for the ag finance budget for general fund? Do we know that yet?
That's beyond my pay grade. There's been discussion about targets coming out in the next few days, but I don't know what those numbers would be. And other committees, too, are hearing spending bills, and that same question has come up.
And Mr. Chair, it would be good to have, you know, we have these testifiers come, and we've got high expectations on good projects, but if there's no money, they won't have them, I guess. And so I guess we'll watch the next couple of days what reality is.
Yeah. Any other questions from committee members? Representative Franson, you mentioned the hurdles because of federal regulations. Do you see any movement of them relaxing some of their standards on hemp?
Yeah, there has been some slow movement on that, but once again, like I mentioned, the Controlled Substance Act, Congress really needs to remove the hemp from the Controlled Substance Act so that will, you know, free up all states to be able to just be able to grow hemp. Hemp is obviously not a drug, but due to back in the day when it was put under the classification of marijuana to stop the growth of hemp because it was competing with the paper industry and amongst other things. And here we are today with this erroneous classification.
Again, questions from the audience. I believe there's somebody that wants to testify. Okay. We have a couple. Make your way up to the dais and have a chair and begin your testimony. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll be very brief. My name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. And I just two quick points on the federal level. We're seeing more co-authors. A lot of our congressional delegation on the House has signed on to the bill, and Senator Franken signed on to the bill, and hopefully that Senator Klobuchar will, that will help us move hemp forward. So it is, I think, going this way. Our other thought is the committee's deciding what to invest in this session. As last year, we decided to create the hemp pilot project, but I've been, you know, working, talking with MDA quite a bit. I do think they need some funds if we're going to move forward. Farmers are taking a lot of risk in looking at this or deciding to move forward. And I would point out that other neighboring states are moving forward. North Dakota has already selected three farmers that they're going forward and working with their Department of Agriculture. So what I worry about happening if the state chooses not to invest in this and we're not supporting our farmers, that the companies that are going to be buying and making the products are going to go to North Dakota, are going to go to Kentucky, where they had 117 in their pilot projects. And so, you know, we would urge you to consider investing, you know, some money in this program, at least to get it started and see if it's something that would work in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Representative.
Yes. Well, I'm always pleased to be here with my co-author.
We need to start off with your name.
Phyllis Kahns.
How long you been here?
I usually don't sit in this seat very much, so I don't know what to do when you get here. Actually, Mr. Peterson said most of what I was going to say, which is that we are falling behind other states. We are falling behind. I have a wonderful letter from the former Speaker of the House in North Dakota that I used to work with on this bill, from dated 2009. And Kentucky has moved way ahead of us, largely from the support of Mitch McConnell, which I don't think there's any other subject I agree with him on. And so I think the federal government will hopefully be moving to help us on this. And I can't think of anything, of any appropriation, that's more of a win-win situation for us to move forward on this issue. And there are, at various times, we've had local people come showing the bricks and so forth that they're making from all imported hemp, since we're not growing any here.
Thank you, Representative. I see no more questions. Any final comments, Representative Franzen, on your bill?
Yes. So this bill that I put on before you is the ongoing appropriation bill. And also, I'd like to add that White Earth Reservation is very much interested and excited about this hemp program as well.
Very good. With that, House File 3184 is going to be laid over for possible inclusion. Stay right there. Next bill coming up, House File 3185. And again, I will move that bill, Representative Franson, to get it before the committee. So go ahead. Let's hear about your next bill.
Same as the first, only this is a one-time appropriation.
Very good. I assume questions would be few or none. And final comments?
Unless we want to do a Groundhog's Day. You know, it's another great bill.
Okay. So once again, House File 3185 will be laid over for possible inclusion in a finance bill.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, we are going to go to House File 2502. Representative Anderson, when he is ready. Representative Anderson, would you like to move your bill before the committee?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair. Thank you. House File 2502, I'd like to move before the committee.
Representative Anderson moves House File 2502. Representative Anderson, go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Those of you who are in ag policy have heard most of this, but for those new, we'll go through it again. This bill would create a voluntary program that would help farmers to retrofit their older, smaller tractors with a roll bar and seatbelt protection. And we're going to be passing out a little summary statement here. And the impetus for the bill came earlier this winter. The Department of Ag held a meeting, and there was a lady from New York State, and she was here and testified on the policy, when it was in the policy committee, that their state, New York State, has instituted this rebate program for roll bars, and it's they feel been a very good safety feature to add to some of these tractors. And you can look at some of the numbers in that pamphlet that when you have a roll bar and seat belt, the protective measure is about 99%. And as I mentioned, most of these tractors are your older, smaller tractors, a chore tractor around the yard, maybe a tractor you'd use to mow road ditches, where I think this would be very applicable. And this would be pre-1987. His tractors built after that date either had a cab on them or a rollover bar installed at the factory. And as a result, if a farmer uses a tractor for those purposes, it's not worth much. He's probably not going to be real enthusiastic about investing another $1,000, $1,500 into putting a roll bar on his tractor. So the program... And this is in five or six states now already. Wisconsin has a similar program. That just a financial incentive to kind of encourage people on a voluntary basis if they would want to have a roll bar installed on their tractors. And I've had a couple of concerned gentlemen call me asking, say, I've got a tractor I take to the county fair every year. It's a classic. I don't want to have a roll bar on it. And I say, that's totally fine. This is not anything mandatory, it's strictly voluntary. And when the New York lady showed in fact, there might be a picture in here in your pamphlet, that it showed a tractor falling through, yeah, on page 12 of your handout. It shows a tractor that fell through a floor in a two-story barn, and that would be a scary experience to go through that. But in that case, the roll bar thankfully saved the person that was sitting in the tractor when that fell through the barn floor. And somebody, a newspaper, called and asked if I had any experience with the rollovers or anything like that, and thankfully I haven't. I was watching about 10 years ago my brother, who was a teacher home for the summer, and it was helping us rake hay along the edge of a back slope of a ditch. And thankfully, the tractor he was using had a cab on it, but in just a second, that thing had tipped over. And if he had not had a cab on it, who knows what would have happened. So Another farmer called me and said he mows road ditches with an older tractor, and evidently some of those are quite steep, because he said if I would hit a gopher mound at the wrong time on the top side of the slope, I could tip over, he said. So he was happy to have this program, and again, the incentive to help put a roll bar on it. Again, the cost, again, it can vary by the color of your tractors. We were told that the John Deere and Kubota tractors, you can get those from the manufacturer. And the red ones, for example, the Case IH or the old International tractors, may have to, in some ways, do an aftermarket type of product. So the cost can vary on some of these. I would say anywhere from $1,000, maybe upwards to $2,000. And what the bill does would pay 70% of that cost, with a maximum out-of-pocket cost for the farmer of $500. So he would have some skin in the game if he chose to take advantage of the program. And we can also use the New York State Call Center. If a farmer wants to take part, he can just call this phone call-in number, and they will put him in touch with what he needs to get done to take advantage of using the program. So we can kind of piggyback on the New York State Call Center to save some of the administrative costs here in Minnesota. But there would be a fairly large chunk, at least right away, of advertising to get the word out to farmers that the program is available and that they could take advantage of it. So with that, Madam Chair, I believe I have a couple of testifiers.
Okay. Representative Daniels, did you have a question? But yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can read to the testifier.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's proceed with the testifiers. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Ben Johnson. I'm from Gem Lake, Minnesota. I'm currently a policy fellow at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs in the Center for Study of Governance and Politics. Testifying in support of House File 2502. Our program has a capstone assignment which developed a group project aimed at some area of public policy. We read a four-part series in the Star Tribune last fall called Tragic Harvest by Jeff Mitrot. Really informative, and compelled my group to try and contact Representative Anderson to support some sort of legislation to help reduce some of the fatalities on small farms and family farms. I'm just here to provide a little bit of information, some data and statistics. The number of farm deaths has risen by double digits over the last decade in Minnesota, Iowa, Michigan, Missouri, and North Dakota, according to federal data. Farm fatalities now account for a quarter of all workplace deaths in Minnesota. Between 2004 and 2014, the most recent year for which statistics are available, more than 200 people died while farming in Minnesota. Of those 200 deaths, 73 were tractor-related, and records show that the majority of those deaths occurred on machines without rollover protection. According to the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, to reiterate something Representative suggested earlier, bars and cabs on tractors are 99% effective at preventing deaths or serious injuries in the tractor overturn when used in conjunction with the seatbelt. As he also alluded to, manufacturers began voluntarily putting rollover protection on new tractors starting in 1985. But according to federal estimates, 40% of tractors in use on American farms are older and still lack this technology. My group feels very strongly that House File 2502 is a good step in increasing the amount of safety available to farmers, small farmers and small family farms. I grew up in Hutchinson, Minnesota. My mother grew up in Austin on a small family farm. What he was referring to in terms of costs to a small family, to a small farmer, most new tractors can cost in excess of $100,000. A lot of what the small farms use are older tractors that are available because they're affordable. So a program like this allows farmers to add some measure of protection. The statistics suggested by research by Jeff Mitrot in this Tragic Harvest series are really enlightening. Roll bars and protection like this is something that we feel is essential, and Minnesota really should join Wisconsin and the five other states that we currently have data on projects to support these sort of initiatives. So, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Do we have any other testifiers?
Pardon?
Do we have any other testifiers? Okay. Representative Daniels?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say to Representative Anderson that I totally support the bill. I'm glad that you remind everybody that it's an optional feature that's not mandatory. I've had a couple of phone calls, a couple of emails that people initially were really upset that this is going to be a mandatory thing and they're going to have to try to figure out how to fit onto an antique tractor. And after talking to them, reassuring them that it's not mandatory, just if you want to do that. And there are a lot of older tractors out. If you get out into the smaller farms, I think the number is over 80,000 tractors that are pre-1987. So there's a number that could use this. And if we can save one life in Minnesota in the next year or two from doing this, I think it's a worthwhile project to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Clark?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question for the previous testifier.
Mr. Johnson, can you come back and join us?
And first of all, let me say, Representative Anderson, I think this is a great bill. I really like it, and I think it's, I know that some of the people most, that will be most protected are the young people, the kids who are helping farm. So I'm really glad the bill's before us. I was just wondering, in your research, I think I heard you say, and I read it somewhere here too, that it's rollover bars with seat belts. Did you, I mean, I haven't seen many seat belts on tractors, and maybe it's just because I'm unfamiliar, but I've seen rollover bars on plenty. Is it a package, the rollover bar with the seat belt, for the research that you've done? Is that really what makes a difference? Or I mean, what do we know about the seat belt part of this study?
And John, Representative Anderson?
I happen to have some numbers with me, Madam Chair. This would be a package that you'd have the roll bar and the seat belt. And to be honest, sometimes I would imagine a farmer might want to put on the seat belt, but it's there if he wanted to. And the evidence still shows that even without the seat belt, the rollover bar would be about 40% effective, but with the seat belt, you're at 99% effectiveness.
Thank you. That's what I was looking for. I appreciate that. And I'm sure it just seems to me like maybe this happens, but I haven't seen much of it. Just a real good educational pamphlet or something that goes with this that shows the difference, because, again, it's the kids who are, I think, the number of those fatalities, I think a large percentage are children. I'm not sure, but I remember hearing that detail. Is that correct?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative, the ages that I've seen range from 2 years old riding with a parent all the way up to mid-80s. The story in the Star Tribune from last fall, it was really comprehensive, covers all areas of small family farms, including deaths in grain silos. So it's not limited specifically to the tractor and rollover protection, but the second part of that series is specific and has some really compelling evidence, and it's what got us on board.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Clark, you. Okay. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. I really like the intent of this bill. I've got one brother that could have easily been killed in a rollover, and I've got two people in other states that are no longer with us. So this would have served them well. But I guess my inquiry would be about the manufacturer of these roll bars or roll cages, whatever you want to call them. I'm just wondering if there's any machine shops in Minnesota right now that are custom making them. I just see an opportunity for some machine shops to capitalize on this.
Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Yeah, that's a great point. I have not looked into that. I've discussed the bill with the equipment manufacturers or the dealers of Minnesota and South Dakota. They have a group of dealerships, and if it's an aftermarket product, I would think some of our Minnesota smaller manufacturers could ramp up to do this, to supply this need. That's a great idea, and we'll certainly discuss that further.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can we discuss the patent rights on that then at some point?
Representative Anderson, you have a comment for that?
Well, seriously, you know, these things have to work and they have to be installed correctly. So I'm sure there's OEM standards that they'd have to meet. So we want these done right and installed right as well. and there has been discussion of having these installed professionally by a dealer, or could the farmer do it himself on the farm? I would think it wouldn't be a real difficult installation, bolting something to the axle frame, but again, we want to make sure that they're done correctly.
Correct. Representative Clark Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Johnson, I just want to compliment you on your testimony. I'm glad you picked up on this issue. And I'm curious if your team looked at other safety issues as you examine that article, that series of articles, they were talking about other issues beyond the roll bars. Did you investigate other issues associated with worker safety on the farm?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative, we focused on this one because we knew that there was already some legislative support for it. We felt this was something that we could support and help do some research on what exists in other states. In reality, the double-digit increases in deaths on Minnesota farms in the last decade comes from a wide variety of sources, not just rollovers. And so we feel that this is an opportunity to take the first step in something that is a tangible, not mandatory program, get the information out there. And so there are other opportunities. Certainly, I didn't bring all of the information with me, but again, the reality is that small family farms are some of the most dangerous workplaces based on the number of workers compared to the number of injuries and deaths. This is the first step we feel with my group at the Policy Fellows Program. We thought this was something that we could get behind now, and again at the pilot program, and if it's successful, if we're able to save even one life. I think Wisconsin is in on it, that they do allow for, but they don't allow for self-installation, but it's the sort of thing where if you can communicate with a farmer that this is something that might potentially save a life, it's the first step in educating them about family farm safety issues beyond just the rollover protection.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Johnson.
And Mr. Johnson, I want you to know that, and members of this committee, that yesterday we added language to the policy bill, in which the Department of Agriculture will be doing an inventory, taking an initiative on farm safety in a larger context, and looking at other issues as well. And if your team is around throughout the spring and fall and summer and fall, I encourage you to check in with the Department of Agriculture. Maybe you can assist them with that, because we're asking them to do that out of Hyde, and so that's always a challenge for a department. And your team might be a valuable resource on that, and can extend your work beyond that. So again, thank you for your work, and I find it interesting that you chose to select this project, and I commend you for doing that.
Mr. Johnson, do you have any additional?
Thank you.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a good bill to be considering, and I'm probably just going to be the bearer of bad news, because the Ways and Means budget targets have come out, and perhaps there are a number of people that do know what the budget target is for this committee, but it's actually a cut of nearly $2 million. So it's going to be challenging to try to figure out where we move forward, and we've had a number of good bills that have been heard this year. You know, farm safety is certainly a top priority for the farm organizations, for the department, for farm families throughout the state. So it would be, that's why I think it's, you know, Representative Johnson mentioned the fact that we do have in the policy bill something that's going to at least start talking about farm safety and perhaps coming up with some suggestions for what we can do next year and beyond. We certainly have, you know, other bills that we've heard over the course of the last few weeks, and it's just disheartening that we're going to be not able to support these, and I think it'll be very challenging for us as a finance committee, as certainly the chair and even the policy chair, to try to move forward. That's just a bit disheartening that this is where we're going, but thank you for your testimony today, and thank you for raising our awareness. Representative Anderson, over the course of the last number of weeks, to be talking about farm safety, I think, is truly an important issue for us. Thank you.
Representative Clark Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Poppe, you are a bearer of bad news, and I'm really sorry to hear that. And I reflect on, you know, let's remember there's a $900 million surplus, and to take $2 million out of this budget is deeply disappointing. And, you know, especially after the chair of this committee, Representative Hamilton, really scratched and clawed and worked so hard in the last session to secure a solid budget out of the, in 2015, and to see this being the response to that fine work that he did. And so there, my guess is that he's not here today, and my guess is he's deeply disappointed. I guess my comment is, again, we have a surplus of $900 million, and to be cutting agriculture at this time, it's very disappointing news.
I was just going to make a comment about the farm accident ratio. Ironically, the day before the article came out of Minneapolis Tribune, one of my younger brothers stuck his hand in a feed auger, and he's fine. He broke his arm, and he's very fortunate. But I want to remind people that farmers take some chances they shouldn't. And long ago, I think it's something that we should look into. Extension, along with Farm Bureau, had a program. And that is where we spent time educating our children on the dangers of farming, all the different things that you can get hurt on. And I think that was a very educational program. It ran through Extension. And I thought it was very effective. We really had reduced accidents, because there are a multitude of things you can get hurt on farms. And unfortunately, that day my brother made a very poor choice. I have to point out, though, his five-year-old grandson was there to see, so he knows to leave that auger alone. So, and Grandpa's fine. They had to take him to the hospital to see that Grandpa was fine. So, anyway, a very important subject. And Representative Anderson, do you have any final comments on this bill?
Well, I hope we can look in the pin cushions or something, and not just for this bill, but for other things also in ag, because it's a passion for a lot of us. I was going to add that Representative Daniels carried kind of a companion bill to this one, where maybe I should back up a second. At the meeting we were at last winter, New York State was there. They used money appropriated from the state, but Wisconsin's program is all run with private donated money. And in his bill, in my bill together, I thought we could combine the two, and if something like this happened, we could maybe patch something together. And we've been in contact with a lot of the major ag companies in Minnesota. We are fortunate to have some of the big companies in agriculture located here in this state. And I'm not going to announce anything yet, but we've had some good luck, good success visiting with some of these major companies. A lot of them have foundations where they look for ways to help in areas such as this. And we've got some commitments for some private dollars, not $250,000, I'll say that. But again, hopefully we can kind of put something together and make this goal. That would be my thought, Madam Chair.
Okay. Well, thank you then. Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson, for bringing this bill and making those comments. I attended that meeting as well, and it was really kind of alarming, the concerns, and I really thank you for your efforts, and hopefully we can find some way to put some money aside for it.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and likewise in regard to the bill, but I do think it is very pertinent. We have a discussion about the targets, you know, roughly half of the money of the $900 billion surplus is one-time money, and I understand that we all want to have a fair tax structure here in Minnesota and not set up Minnesota families on a tax roller coaster here. And so I hope, as we're moving through some of the items that are being discussed, and I think there is time to turn this ship around. I really do. We have the transportation budget, which has some disagreement amongst the House and the Senate. There's the sales tax revenue being proposed on parts, and I think that if we come to some kind of compromise on that and work our way through that, many of those dollars should be available for these committees who have heard a lot of great bills this year. And I really hope that we didn't essentially meet for nothing to take one thing from another place we had funded last year, or for example the unspent avian flu money I saw that was in there. Those are some things that I think we could keep intact and be ready for again this year as the avian flu continues to develop and I guess be more transferable. We tackled a big portion of it last year, but we do have the opportunity to turn this ship around, and I just urge Minnesotans who are listening today to get in touch with the House leadership. I know our chairs here have fought really hard for good budgets, and would encourage Minnesotans to do the same by contacting the Speaker's office.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, do you have any other comments?
No, Madam Chair. Just kind of interesting, in the policy meeting that we heard the bill, the FFA chapter in Randolph came up, and a young gal sat right here and spoke very articulately. And their chapter has I think it was a 656, and that's a red international tractor that they use. They plant some plots and kind of have a community garden, I think is what they did. And this was an open station tractor with no cab or rollover protection. So they were enthused. They wanted to be the first one to get the roll bar in the program. And I kind of said I would hopefully help them get the first one, but we'll have to see how it goes see where things turn up.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a sidebar, I believe today is their tractor parade, actually. And that's kind of a cool thing that they do.
Yeah, I saw a picture, Madam Chair, and they get a couple hundred tractors in school, and I think the whole school takes part of the day to watch the tractor cade and again, really draw attention to the importance of agriculture. So it was really neat in the town of Randolph. And a great FFA advisor. I think he's a part-time farmer and a part-time instructor, and has really built up the program, and they do a great job down there.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Yeah, that would be a cold drive to, anyway, without a cab. Representative Fabian.
Madam Chair, a little bit off topic, but to address the FFA group in Randolph, I don't know how much the rollover equipment costs, but I would issue a challenge to the committee. I'll throw in the first $50 if everybody else does too, and we'll pay for it.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay, with that, Representative Anderson, House File 2502 will be laid over.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. All right. We are going to hear Representative Hansen.
Yeah.
2532. Representative Hansen, would you like to move your bill to get it before the committee?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I do have the A16-1026 amendment to get the bill in the shape I would like, if we could move that and I could describe it.
Okay. Representative Hansen moves the House File 2532 and then the author's amendment at this time. A16-1026 amendment to get the bill in the shape. Is there any discussion to that amendment? Okay. All those in favor of the A16-1026 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Say nay. Okay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Thank you. Representative Hansen, to your amended bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm just happy to get a motion adopted. That's kind of fun. This bill as amended, we've had consultation yesterday with the Commissioner of Agriculture staff and DNR staff to get the bill into the form it is. The prior bill had appropriations from both agencies. Madam Chair and members, the purpose for this bill is to take a look at the public resource of wild deer. We've had previous testimony about the use of neonicotinoid pesticides. There have been a number of research studies related to those. In many areas of the state, the public's deer eat a lot of corn. And so there's quite a bit of research looking at hair samples for an indicator of different toxins or different compounds. So if you looked in our hair, you could probably see if we were smoking, what we were eating. There are a number of research studies that have looked at that. And so this would be in kind of a first blush screen, looking to see if there is an impact of neonicotinoid pesticides in the wild deer population. The amendment that was adopted defines that we're not looking at tissue, we're not looking at blood, we're looking at hair samples. And the method that this would be for collection is when we have the deer season, where deer are, where the corn is mature, deer are eating corn, the corn that has been treated with neonicotinoids and the seed treatments. Hunters harvest the deer, they bring it into the food processors, MDA staff are going to the food processors, and they could collect a sample of hair at the food processors. When we were discussing this, one of the original thoughts might be having collection of individual deer, looking at the experimental design to be broad or narrow. We wanted to reduce costs as much as we could to get an initial screen, and we also delayed the report date so that there'd be more time and flexibility for the agency to report back. I don't know what we're going to find here. I don't have a predetermined conclusion that we would detect neonicotinoids or if we would not. Some of the existing research shows that mammalian mammals that process different toxins and toxins, some pesticides, they may break down or process those differently than birds or even fish. So if it's least likely to be impacting mammals, and deer are large mammals, if it's least likely there, and if we have a detection in the hair, then we could look back with more detail. The appropriation that is here was an up to $150,000. I want to be clear, that was a back-of-the-envelope determination yesterday. I think the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Natural Resources are here to look at that. So again, to minimize cost, you would have Department of Agriculture staff, when they're out doing their work at food processors, collecting a sample, bringing back to the Department of Ag laboratory, analyzing the hair samples for detection of neonicotinoids, and then reporting back to the legislature June 30th of next year.
Okay. Are there any testifiers for or against File 2532 as amended? Would you please state your name and identify yourself for the record?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Matt Woolman. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Agriculture. As Representative Hansen had suggested, neonicotinoids are a big issue here in Minnesota, and initially were registered by EPA as a reduced-risk pesticide due to their lower toxicity to mammals, particularly to farm workers and to applicators. They are very effective at the control of insects and root feeding insects, both foliar and in the roots. They do show some advantages in pest control, particularly against those types of insects, which are not easily treated using foliar sprays of non-systemic compounds. In general, neonicotinoids, as Representative Hansen had indicated, are generally lower risk for mammals. They are moderately toxic to fish and aquatic amphibians, and they are generally highly toxic to insects, including bees. We did have some conversation yesterday. There currently is no known method for identifying neonicotinoid compounds in hair. So we would have to identify that method at the department through our laboratory. There are tests, as Representative Hansen did indicate, for arsenic and lead and mercury accumulation, and these tests are done using basically putting the sample in acid and then conducting an elemental analysis. Because neonics are a molecular compound, we wouldn't be able to do that. The acid digestion would basically break down the neonicotinoid and it would not be identifiable. So we look forward to continuing our conversation on this. We want to, if this moves forward, that we would want to make sure that it's a study that is well scoped, that we have the resources to do that, and that it's something that we could actually conduct. So we do have some questions, but look forward to some additional conversation.
Thank you. Representative Clark, do you have a question? Okay. Representative Lewick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the testifier, if my memory serves me, we do some intense scrutiny of protein tissue that comes off our farms through the USDA and our agriculture inspection systems. Do you have any idea if we've identified an issue within that system? I know we look to extremely small trace amounts of a wide variety of things that could get into edible protein products. And where does this fit into this system, looking at hair versus edible tissue? I just raise a question of, well, we had a huge program that's nationwide on tissue relative to anything that will harm a human being, and so what's the scoop on that?
Matt Wollman?
Madam Chair, maybe for clarification, are you talking, what kind of protein are you talking?
I'm talking about all of our stuff, all of our meat that's USDA inspected. Huge, I mean literally everything that isn't directly farm raised and slaughtered on the farm. And I know that we are able to detect minute trace elements of a wide variety of items that could in any way harm our food chain and human consumption. So I'm just curious, what do we know about that whole area relative to this issue?
Do we have a Mr. Wollman?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Raj Mann is with the Department of Agriculture, and I think he may be able to answer that question.
Oh, welcome. Will you please identify yourself for the record and share your testimony?
Madam Chair and members, my name is Raj Mann, and I'm a research scientist with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. The amount of neonicotinoids that goes into the proteins, the first thing is when we treat the seed or any neonicotinoid or any other pesticide as applied, only less than 5% actually goes into the plant. And as the plant grows up, there is a breakdown of the products. Even for the seed treatments for soybean, it has been shown that when the treated seed is grown, after some time like 2 months, there is not sufficient pesticide left in the plant to kill the aphids. Those are the actually target insects. And by the time there is a seed, the amount is very, very limited. And there are always a tolerance limits for every kind of food. So when something is treated, at the end, when the food we consume, that could be a vegetables, fruits, there are tolerance limits. And the EPA approves that the any amount of pesticide should be below those tolerance limits. So far it has not been found in the seed, or even if it is there, it would be below the tolerance limits. So as far as hair is concerned, the deer hair is concerned, if the deer would be eating the grown-up plants, that would be so much grown that the amount will be very, very minute to reach into the deer. As you have already listened, that the neonicotinoids are relatively safe to mammals. Their LD50 values are about 5,000 milligrams, and those are allowed even to treat the dogs also. About 80 to 110 pound of a dog can be treated with up to 500 milligram of a neonicotinoid. So as far as deer is concerned, the probable amount of neonicotinoids going into the at the time of the harvest or when the plant is grown up is probably be very low. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Luke. Just to follow up, so the testifier was talking about soybeans, and I soybeans, the evidence is there exactly as he said, that usually after the V4 stage, there's not enough of a pesticidal activity to that be retained. I did not, and it does not mention human health in here. I'm talking about the deer. And the deer are a public resource. So what are the impacts on the deer? And the deer are consuming corn, and they're consuming a lot of corn right before harvest. So what I'm asking here is for us to look, just to look and to see if this needs to be looked at, because that public resource, we have over, I think, 470,000 deer hunters in the state of Minnesota. So when we have that many deer, and I just hit one the other day, I think it's a prudent thing to do, to just look. And I don't want to have a very large study that is going to cost a lot of money, because we just heard we're not going to have a lot of money. And in this particular fund, there's not a lot of money. But I see this as an initial screen to look at the public resource with deer, to see what impacts there are, if any. And I don't have a predetermined conclusion to that. I have confidence in our ag department in consultation with the university, the Department of Natural Resources, and Fish and Wildlife, to design an initial screen to look at if there's something there. And I think that's a good thing for us to do as Minnesotans, to check this out. And it won't cost a large amount of money.
Okay. Representative Luke, did you have another comment?
A little bit of a follow-up, and let me make sure we understand what I'm asking here. First of all, livestock and poultry both consume a huge, huge amount of corn, as well as some element of soybeans and a variety of other crops that may be treated. So it would seem that the U.S. Department of Agriculture, through their inspection process, when we're after that minute potential mistake that a farmer may have made with livestock and be able to find stuff down to molecular level in tissue, that if in fact USDA and EPA were talking, that we would have some concept of whether or not this represents, one, a presence in the tissue, and whether or not there's a harmful aspect there. So I guess I don't hear that we've done the kind of detailed looking at the documentation and the studies out there already on this, or absence of them, that would cause us to launch into any kind of a program. It would seem like first thing we do is do a review of all the science available, and I'm just curious if we've done that, because I can tell you one of the things that dairy folks, meat producers all over the country, do their best to make sure that we don't accidentally introduce anything into the food chain. Again, I use the food chain as something that we spend a huge amount of time and effort to protect, and so I just do we or do we not have any concept of where this may present itself within the food chain, because, boy, we look at that every day as we produce food for the folks in the United States.
Members, before we answer that or go on, we have two more testifiers on this bill, and we have one more bill that we want to get through today. So just a reminder. Let's spend about five more minutes on this. So, did you have a response to Representative Lewick? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Lewick. So, again, not talking about domestic livestock, I'm talking about wild deer, which are the public resource, which the Department of Natural Resources manages for the public and the people of Minnesota. So, Mr. Sullivan could cite a couple studies when I had him look at mammalian. I referenced those that, again, mammalian studies with neonicotinoids show that it tends to break down. So, and I think we were referenced on that, that there's a higher likelihood with fish or avian tissue. Not talking about proteins. The only time we were thinking about proteins is when we looked at the existing CWD collection, that might be a place where the Department of Natural Resources during CWD monitoring could sample hair at that time. So what we're looking at here, again, is a study, and I think you were almost validating what we were going to do there, is to say, let's take a look at this and report back. If there's a problem, there's less likely of a problem to be here.
Okay. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to confirm with the second testifier, when you said that after a couple of months of a growing plant, there's extremely low levels of the chemical left in the plant that would, again, could you go over that and tell us a level of what's left and any possible danger from that residue?
Yes, there is some level left in, and that depends on the type of the plant and the type of the pesticide used. For example, there could be some left in the pollen that could be in the range of 5 parts per billion for corn, and because there is those levels are very harmful to the bees, and bees are one of the most sensitive insects. So those could be harmful to the pollinators, definitely. Yes, there could be some. But it depends upon, again, the type of the insect and the type of whatever type of the organism at that level. For some organisms, it will be harmful. For the other, it may not be harmful.
Chair Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. Yeah, it's interesting, and I don't really know what the end game here is. The study, and I could be wrong, but I thought I had seen a bill earlier this session or last year that would have banned this chemical on state-owned land. So, again, that's kind of, to me, putting the cart before the horse before we have any evidence. But, you know, there really seems to be an effort to scrutinize this particular chemical. And I would just add that this is a seed treatment, and by using this on the seed in very small quantities, it saves the spraying later on in the life of that plant, where you'd actually spray the entire plant with a different type of chemical. So I think we need to proceed cautiously with this and to avoid the perception of going after any particular chemical before there are any scientific studies that show there is a danger present.
Okay. Representative Clark.
Well, I'm aware of your concern about our time, so I'll just be very brief. I just want to say that the information that you gave us, Professor, I'm wondering if we could just see that documentation, and it seems like what Representative Hansen talked about is that we're talking about doing the very thing that you were talking about, Representative Lewick, where we actually put that information together so we know. And it sounds like everyone wants to know. So I just, it sounds like it's a good idea, it's not going to cost a lot of money, and it's useful in terms of protecting one of our farm resources, the bees.
With that, Representative Hansen, do you have any closing comments?
Were there other testifiers, or were you?
I don't know if there were. Are there any other testifiers? Okay. Well, seeing none, go ahead, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and in closing comments, Representative Anderson. So, the bill on banning, that wasn't mine. I don't know, might have been Bly's, but but it wasn't mine, and this isn't connected to that. I'm curious, and I think we should, in our role, to be curious on this, and I think it's something where we're reporting back. There's no outcome predetermined here. I'm just saying we should take a look, and the reason is, with neonicotinoids, it's been a rapid deployment, particularly with corn, over 90% of the seed corn treated, so a lot of acres that are having it there. And so wild deer belong to all of us, and I think it's something to look at that we could have useful information come back to make a good decision in a timely manner. So I know it's being laid over, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, but this is with a different account, so it wouldn't be bound by the budget target. So hope you'll consider it.
Okay. With that, members, House File 2532 is amended as will be laid over. The next bill on the agenda is House File 2906, Representative Bly. Representative Bly, to your bill. Would you like to move it?
Yes, although I'm not sure what the destination is.
Should we lay it over?
Yeah, that'd be
okay.
Okay, thank you. So I would move that House File 2906 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. So since I've already kind of been fingered as a troublemaker, let me say that that I don't mean any bad intent here. This bill came about because of some conversations I've been having and also concerns about water quality and also what's happening to the grain market and other kind of farming markets. And I attended the organic conference that the department offers a while ago. It's in St. Cloud, and was very impressed with a lot of the information I got there. But I was also impressed by a number of conventional farmers who were investigating organics. And I think I wanted to make sure. I know that the Department of Ag does have a program for assisting with transition, and my concern was that we made funds available to the, if there was an increasing number of farmers wishing to make that change, that they wouldn't run out of money or they wouldn't run out of funds. And I wanted to invite down Tom Peterson to come and say a few words about the conversation that we'd had about it as well.
Sure. Welcome, Mr. Peterson. You want to identify yourself for the record and who you represent?
Madam Chair, members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. And we do have policy supporting cost share transition program, so we would support this bill. But a couple comments on it. Yesterday, the policy division, many of you are on that, voted to extend the Organic Advisory Task Force, and I did serve 6 years on that task force, and transition assistance was always one of the top recommendations that the committee had. It was just a question of how to do it, I think. So it's always been an interesting thing because the farmers you're maybe familiar with that have to go through a 3-year transition process that a lot of times is very difficult. Another comment I just wanted to make is that we try to promote this to our farmers. Many of you might have seen the higher grain markets right now with corn and soybeans in challenging times. And I think I checked, it was $3.50 for corn, about $9 for soybeans, where the organic market is about double that right now, when I read the markets this last week. I, too, attended the organic conference this year in St. Cloud, and I encourage other representatives to try to attend that at a time this January. It's a very good conference. But the one thing I was very struck by was the number of conventional farmers that were in attendance there. And I, when I got there looking and I asked many of the conventional farmers why they were there, they were looking at the markets, and this year being a very challenging market, and looking at options, and that with commodity prices what they are, inputs went very high. When corn went high, soybeans went high, bag of seed, fertilizer, land rent, everything went high. now that it goes back down, you know, they're looking for options. I think also looking at soil and other things are important when people are considering cost share. The other thing I would just mention that we, you know, continue to work with Representative Bly on this, and I don't know if you're going to hear from the department, but the department does have a transition program, so not sure how this would work with it. We need to keep promoting that. I don't think there's been as many people applying for it. Farmers can also use the NRCS, or it's an EQIP program through the federal government, to apply for transition assistance too. So trying to figure out what exactly would be needed for this is something we have to continue working on. Thank you.
Okay. With that, do we have any questions from the members? Representative Clark?
I'm sure, real quick, it's not a question so much as to say I really want to urge you to do what you said in terms of helping make sure that some money goes to promotion, because what I have found is a lot of people don't know that they can get help with the funding for the transition years, and that keeps some people from going organic, and they need to, for the very reason that was just talked about by Mr. Peterson. Some of the opportunities in the market are so much higher now.
Okay. Yes, Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. And I just wanted to say that I have been in some conversation with the department about this, and trying to get some more information about how to be most helpful. I'm hoping to continue interaction with the Organic Task Force to get, you know, firsthand information from them as well. So it is very much a work in progress, and trying to discover where is the best place to invest. And if Mary Hanks had some comments to make about, you know, what might be helpful, that might help as well.
I did neglect that. Is there any other Mary wanted to come join us? Please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Mary Hanks. I'm the Director of Marketing and Development at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Representative Bly did contact me to get some ideas about what would help with this transition period. And knowing that funds may be declining rather than increasing, we came to Representative Bly with a very, very small amount of money that we think would help. The department does currently provide cost share assistance for farmers who want to start to transition. We will cost share their interaction with a certifier over the three-year period to get trial certification inspections. The certifiers can't generally provide advice, but they can, because they're restricted by the National Organic Program, they can't certify and advise. So they do trial inspections with them. We, in the past, had some funding through a federal grant called Tools for Transition that the university had, and provided farm business management scholarships for farmers who wanted to transition and may need some of that financial planning, business planning, to look at what the new costs might be, the labor and the markets. That funding has gone away. In the last 4 years, we've spent only about $160,000 on those scholarships, but those dollars are gone. As Representative Clark mentioned, we do need to do more promotion and let people know that we do have the cost share assistance, that FSA and NRCS have additional assistance. There are probably many, many other things that might help farmers in transition. Representative Bly has asked us to include a more detailed discussion of that with our Organic Advisory Task Force as the new year comes in, and we will certainly do that.
Okay, is there any other testifiers? Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bly, in here, the grant is a grant, or is it a loan at some point in the future?
Representative Bly.
I believe it's a grant. That's what I'm asking for here. Certainly, we could consider that. As I said, it's a work in progress. I'm looking for some way to help those farmers who are interested in making that transition, and if we can help them, I think that would be a good thing.
Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two more questions. Is there a dollar figure on the number of organic products that are, I'll say, sold in the state of Minnesota off the store shelves and farmers markets and so forth?
Representative Blythe.
I don't have the figures for that necessarily. We probably could do some research on it. I do the grocery shopping for my family, and the parts of the shelves in both the conventional grocery stores and in the food co-op where I buy things, the organic products are increasing. I also know that we do consume for organic animals, the chickens and beef that and pork that may be out there that's sold as organic has to be fed by organic feed. So there is a calling for it, certainly, and I think it's we import some of the organic grain from other countries in order to make sure that we have enough. So yes, I think there is a market out there.
Okay. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question may be for Mr. Peterson. If you come back down, I'll just ask the question while he's making his way to the table. You talked about the price of organic versus non-organic commodities. I'm wondering, what is the difference in the yield per acre? So, for example, organic soybeans versus non-organic soybean.
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, you know, it really varies. You know, and in general, I would say it's less from what I talk to people. Last year, I think everybody had a really good year, you know, and I think the organic producers I talked to had very strong yields. You know, in general, I'd say it is lower from what I hear. But it's, you know, last year was very strong. And it depends on where you're at, too, in your operation. You know, we definitely see the people that have been doing it for a long time have it well managed and know how to control their weeds and are very familiar with it. Some of the newer farmers, I think we do see challenges. That's why the transition is important. I'd mention that we do not, the legislature used to fund the organic cost share for, because once you go through the transition, then you have to pay to be certified every year. And if you're a livestock farmer, you have to pay for livestock certification and crop certification, so it can be spendy as well.
Okay. Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Organic, at least what I've read lately, it's the fastest growing segment of production agriculture. I mean, it's not that large. It's a niche market, but it is rapidly growing. And Representative Bly, to your bill, I would just say this. You know, I like your intention, but I think we'd have to determine exactly what other help is available before we move ahead with this. But my generalization is that a farmer that's running 10,000 acres is not going to convert to organic. It's usually your smaller operation, whether it be crops or dairy, that type of thing. And I would just say that on line 1.7, when you have in there a farmer who demonstrates financial hardship, I think that in itself, how do we demonstrate that? What's the bar we use to say somebody is having hardship? And I would just say, take that part out. To a farmer, any farmer who, due to that transition period, would be eligible for what you're trying to do here. Because I think traditionally it would be a smaller operator that would think of doing this anyway, and then you wouldn't have to go through that process of how do you determine that bar for financial hardship.
Yeah. Representative Blythe.
Chair and Mr. Anderson, I appreciate your comments, and I think you highlight the need for greater conversation about it all and figuring all of that out, and I appreciate your comment. I do have a handout talking about some farmers who are organics and some of the things that they find, and I'd just like to pass that around for members to have a look at, and maybe that will answer some of the questions you might have. But Representative Anderson, I'd be happy to, you know, work with you or talk with you more about some suggestions you might have. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Peterson.
Real quick, Madam Chair and Chair Anderson, there are, up in the valley, there are many producers who are several thousand acres of wheat and corn. It's corn especially and wheat. So it's, there are some very large, you know, operators that I would say are over 1,000 acres. So it is interesting.
Representative Clark.
Just a comment. I was at a organic farming conference, too, in La Crosse last year. And I want to say one of the things that I became aware of is that there's some conventional farmers who are trying to set aside a portion of their land to do organic farming and to see if it works for them, you know, economically. And so that's another group of people that are going through transition. So there's a lot of movement here. And, you know, farmers are smart. They're going to need to figure out how to make this work for them.
Okay. Did you want? Okay. Representative Blythe, and did you have any other final comments?
Thank you, Chair. I just appreciate the conversation. I wanted to bring it forward as a possibility for us to pursue and think about how we can help farmers who may want to make that transition. I think it's beneficial as we look at water quality as well and trying to solve that problem in some way. I think the more farmers that are using those kinds of practices are, that's one step that's more helpful in the total picture of things. And I think there's room for that kind of diversity in our agriculture as well.
Thank you. Well, with that, then, the House File 2906 is laid over. Okay. And then Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to correct the record to apologize to Representative Bly and Representative Anderson. Representative Bly did not have that bill, and so he's not a troublemaker. Representative Anderson, you were correct. I actually did have an amendment, but it's not really for this bill.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Okay, with that, GOP members, there will be an Ag Finance meeting at room 546 right after this. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, with that, I don't know, are we meeting again or stay tuned? Yes. So, Representative Hamilton or Chair Hamilton will be back. So, with that, meeting adjourned.